Hello and welcome to another episode of the UHT Student Theatre Podcast. My name is MJ and I am here with Phoebe. And today we're going to ask each other some questions and give each other some answers. Are you ready, Phoebe?
Sure am. Before we get started, we want to acknowledge that we are recording this podcast on the lands of the First Nations people of Australia. I am on Bunurong and Wurundjeri land of the Kulin Nation. We acknowledge the elders of these lands and we acknowledge the continuing contribution they make to the life of this region and this country. Sovereignty was never ceded.
All right. If you're ready, Phoebe, my first question is, Why do you make theatre? Just coming right out of the gate.
Why do I make theatre? I guess for a lot of different reasons. I feel like, I don't know, maybe this is cheesy to say, but I feel free when I'm making theatre. Like, I feel like it's that space where you can express yourself, which again, I feel like sounds cliched, but it's just that way of sort of releasing that part of yourself, like getting sort of being embodied as well. I think that's a really important aspect of it for me. Like, we spend a lot of our lives in our minds. And I think it's really important to remember that you have a body. And I find theatre to be a really good way to do that. And I also like that, unlike other creative forms, you're sort of up on the floor, you're moving around. It feels a lot more collaborative a lot of the time. Like you're not just sitting at your computer writing or like playing a piece of music. Like it's just very like, yeah, collaborative, embodied. I like really like all those aspects of it. And it's also just really fun. Like there's just no better feeling than getting in a theatre space. I'm a secondary school teacher and I've been teaching theatre and drama for the past couple of years. And I also just love so much making theatre with young people and that experience of opening them up and reminding them that they have a body, because I think it's even more important when you have a when you're a teenager and you're so self-conscious and all of that. So there's some of the reasons.
Is there another form of art that you find also fun for similar reasons? Like, how come you don't find, say, film? Do you enjoy making film as much as you make theatre, or less so?
I certainly would be open to it, but it's just something that has never piqued my interest in the same way. I think I really like the live setting of theatre and being in front of an audience in a live setting.
Yeah, I feel like it's same as that, like embodied nature. When you're there in front of an audience, you have to like connect with them in a way. I feel like you don't with a camera.
Yeah, and I feel like there's just no feeling like it than performance week, whatever performance it is, you know, that adrenaline rush and how good you feel during those performance weeks. Like, well, there's obviously the stress involved as well. There's no other feeling like it. Shall I ask my first question to you?
I'm ready, as ready as I can be.
How do you know when a show is done? That's something I'm really curious what other people answer.
I think this is such a good question. I had a friend and she's a visual artist. And she used to do lots of work on like, how do you know when the art is done? And she did this whole series of works where it was just like pieces of paper and she would fold them up until she was like, all right, I think that's enough folding. And then she would stick it. And I think it's like such an interesting question. Like, when do you know a show is done? When do you know that it's time to show it to an audience? So for me, I feel like you can never really know. You can never be so certain. And that's why it's so important, I think, to put that show deadline on yourself, to say like in 4 weeks, you know, you start marketing the show, you start selling tickets, like this is when it's going to go up. And that's probably the most ready a show can ever be. Because for me, part of finding the show is putting it in front of an audience. So I feel like you can only really, I think the 4 week method is a good way to get a show to somewhere where it's as ready as it can be to show to an audience. And it's only really done probably after the first week being in front of the audience and being interacted with and seeing how the acting changes on stage and the elements that you see audiences react to. So I suppose for me, a show is done when it's finished its run, I think. You've set your time limit, you've finished your performance, and if you ever pick the show back up and do it again, I feel like it's like starting the show all over from the beginning, because it's going to be in front of new audiences, you're going to have a different team. Yeah, I feel like a show is done when the audience says it's done.
Yeah, so not until that closing night, because it does usually evolve so much over a run. as well. But has that translated for you into, I guess, the online world? Because that's something that we don't necessarily have at the moment, is a live audience, seeing things night after night. Have you made any theatre over the past couple of years? Has that changed your answer?
It has. I would say I made 3 Zoom plays in the lockdown. And I would say that they were mediocre at best, and like forks in eyes at worst at times. But I feel like we've all had that over the past couple of years. And I would say in terms of like finding when I thought they were done, I feel like I learned and began to appreciate so much more that sense of face in the audience, in that works that I almost felt like ashamed. I was like, oh God, like I've absolutely bungled this. I don't know why I tried to make anything. This isn't my medium. And just having the faith that the audience is going to be generous and they're going to be open and willing kind of has reminded me, yeah, that when it comes to preparing for a show, you kind of just have to, you can only really get it 90% of the way. And then you just have to put your faith in the people that are coming to see it, that they're going to be kind and they're going to be open and they're going to latch onto what it is that they enjoy. And yeah, I think that's going to be,
I feel like that's a lot. So many shows where I'm like, this is 90% of the way before it goes on stage.
Yeah, that's true. That 90% can be hard to hit sometimes. All right, question number 2. Should art have to justify itself politically?
Ooh, I was wondering if we have any crossover questions. And this question's also on my list for you. So maybe you can give your thoughts after. I'm super interested by this question. I'm a little bit obsessed by it, actually. And I feel like I have a lot of arguments about it with just a range of parties, other teachers, students, my peers, anyone who will argue with me about this. I'm like, let's go. I just have really mixed feelings about this because I feel like the conversation usually happens in the context of Hollywood or some one of those really big organizations that control so much of our media. It's all straight white men still. It's all a bit boring. It's pretty derivative a lot of the time. Like, we all know this. So we're, but I'm just like, and then I'll be like, oh, like, where's Anderson? I'm just, you know, there's just so many dudes. Like, I find it hard to engage. And then some dude will be like, oh, but like, art doesn't have to like be woke or like do this politically, or it can still just be beautiful in its own right. And to an extent, I think that's true. Like, another example recently, sorry, I was going off into all of my examples.
I love it.
Is Sally Rooney. I feel like, again, this isn't really theatre, but people have been attacking her a lot for being not writing people of colour into her stories, not being woke enough in various ways. And I am a bit like, she's just one author. She's writing about her own experience. Do you want her to write poorly written characters of colour? Like, I don't know. It's really interesting because then it tips into that conversation about representation, who can perform what sort of role, who can write what sort of role. Does everything have to have a political purpose? Is there a certain, if you have a certain audience base, do you have more of an obligation? But these are all things that I just, like, okay, another example, which is vaguely linked to theatre, is Hamish and Andy. Like, I remember listening to a podcast where Hamish was talking about how they all just wanted to be funny, relaxing, an escape for people. But I'm like, you have such a massive platform. Like, you actually could have done quite a lot with that platform. So I guess my answer is, I often think that it does. I often am left wanting, especially with mainstream media, a little bit more. I don't think you have to have a political purpose to your piece necessarily, but I'm also like, how can you not? Because I feel like I've never produced anything that doesn't have, everything is political. So how can you have a political purpose? And I think not acknowledging it is limiting.
This, I think, we align very similarly in that I don't think a piece needs to justify itself politically, but it does have to engage with politics. I think when you have work that kind of, you know, it doesn't need to have a political, doesn't need to be deliberately going out there to set, you know, certain views straight. It can be, say, like a fun story of, you know, a knight who goes on the quest, right? But instantly, the moment we tell this story of a knight who goes on a quest, we have to question, okay, well, who is the knight, right? And who's representing the night? And then what does the night represent? And when we tell those stories, we can't eliminate the fact that there's a whole bunch of politics rolled up in there. So even though it can be, you know, just this fun story of someone who goes off to do something, I think we have to really critically think about what elements of our politics are baked into storytelling and story form.
And it's very relational, isn't it? Like, your art sits in relation to all the other art that's being produced right now. And if you're doing a story about, like, a straight white knight going on a quest, like, you're just adding to this narrative that's been done 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Some of those narratives can be very damaging. So, like, how are you placing yourself? Like, what are you in the zeitgeist? And that does say something, whether you want to or not.
The one thing I will say is I definitely feel like sometimes when we talk about art justifying itself and in terms of politics, I often feel that we say that like art has to add something new to the conversation or that it has to, but sometimes I think it is okay for art to simply reiterate what others have said or to just add more to a conversation, even if essentially it feels identical to what, you know, like Squid Game, I think is a good example because it's been so popular and it's so recent, but I don't think it's really adding more to this conversation of like workers' rights or of like capitalist frustration. It's just kind of putting it back into the eyes of the audience again with these beautiful visuals and creative colors and through these incredible performances. And I think that is okay for us to do it again, especially with theater, where it is live and you want to have that experience of, you know, it's okay to like, I mean, I don't really like Shakespeare, but I think it's okay to put Shakespeare on again because like we do, it is good to see it live for the first time. There are a lot of people out there who have never seen Shakespeare and might be like, yeah, I do want to check out this Shakespeare. I've never seen it before. And I think sometimes when we feel the need to, you know, have to do Shakespeare in a very modern way, and we ask like, how is it relevant to this audience right now? Sometimes what I think we end up actually asking is like, how is it relevant to an audience that has seen the past 12 Shakespeares that have come out in theater?
Yeah.
And so
it sounds like with this, on this particular topic, we align as well, because when people try to add modern references into a Shakespeare for no reason, that's equally as annoying as them trying to like reinventing the wheel for no reason.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think if you're going to do that, just rewrite the whole Shakespeare. That's my opinion. Yeah. If you just like the story, then just take the story and give it to a new writer and say, rewrite it in a modern context, but just use these plot points. I feel like people are too afraid to mess with the classics in that way. They think, oh, I want to use these words but I want to put in some modern element. And I'm like, no, just steal the good bits. You know what I mean? That's okay. That's what we've been doing for years.
Having said that, this is actually very hypocritical because I recently put on a school production of The Wizard of Oz and I had them check in it with a QR code at the gates to the Emerald City.
That's funny though. It's all right when it's funny.
It was funny. It got a big laugh. So I have no regrets. The other thing that I was going to say about this topic is that I think, I had a train of thought. Oh yeah, I think you should be able to create whatever art you want. Like, you can write about something that's been written about 1,000 times before. You can write about something that's politically incorrect. I think what I more have a problem with is what is made prominent by the broader systems around us. Like, do whatever you want in your bedroom. Do whatever you pour whatever you want to your friends or your small audiences. But I mean, obviously, it's a much broader political problem about who controls what art is distributed and how much popularity varies.
Yeah, art takes money and someone has to pick where that money goes. That's kind of the bigger issue rather than the what art is being created.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I asked this question in my last Zoom podcast conversation, but I think it's such a good question, so I'm going to ask it again. How do you structure your creative process?
That's an interesting question. Yeah, because everyone probably has a lot of different answers to a question like that. I think my creative process is a bit random, which I'm sure a lot of people would say, but I almost feel like I need to start making it less random in thinking about this, especially when something like full-time work starts to get in the way of like personal creativity. I've actually been thinking recently, I need to set some sort of structure where it's like 30 minutes a day you write or 30 minutes a day you do this. because in general, I feel like I like to work when I'm really sleep deprived, maybe a bit hungover or something like that. Because I feel like that's when the walls come down and you can just write without that inhibition. And I almost miss having the structure of something like my undergrad creative writing degree, because I just had to keep producing content for these folios.
And they put all these restrictions on you in schools, which end up, you know, you leave and you have no restriction. All you want when you're in school is no restrictions to make the work you want to make. And then suddenly you don't have any restrictions. You're like, I can't make anything.
it's a crippling amount of choice and unstructured time. So it's interesting. I feel like I end up mostly at the moment just creating stuff that's for the direct purpose of things that are going on at school.
Mm.
And eventually I will move away from that. But at the moment, that's taking up a lot of my creative energy. And I sort of thrive, I think, off having those deadlines or those specific purposes. But when it comes to sitting down and writing, I just like to do it, just start. I'm a real writer. Like, I like to just type on a laptop, don't really like handwriting. I like devising theatre with other people, but at the end of the day, I actually just really like sitting down and writing things.
Yeah. My Samuel Lovell, who was a writer who I used to work with a lot when I used to live back in Wollongong. I used to love working with Sam because he, you know, I would pitch him an idea or something and then he would catch the bus home. And in his like 1 hour on the bus home, he would just let it all go. And he would send it to me being like, this is the worst piece of crap I've ever written in my entire life. Please don't think it's good, but just look over what I'm doing. Is it all right? And I'm like, yeah, this is the general gist. You just need to make it good now. And he's like, okay, great.
And I feel like what you've said now touches on another thing that I've been thinking about recently, which is just being crippled by thinking what you're writing is bad instead of just dumping it all out and being like, yeah, it's probably going to be bad. Most of what anyone writes is bad, but it's just nice to let it out. And then eventually find like those good bits.
Kids are good at that. They seem to lack that same sense of fear that I feel like we develop as an adult. I feel.
We strive as an adult to regain that, don't we? Like what we had as a toddler. And we're just making up stories constantly, going along with any idea. Toddlers are very yes and. So my next question for you is, what is missing from the theatre that you see?
Audience engagement. And by that, I don't mean like getting the audience up or, you know, putting someone on the spot or anything like that. But I feel like, you know, we had these like Shakespearean Globe performances. And like you see lots of youth, they go to live gigs and they go to live performances where you can chat to your friends about what's happening on the stage while it happens. And you can yell things out and you can boo and you can jeer and you can really interact with the performance. As I feel like so much of the theater that I see these days really expects people to come in, sit in a dark space and be quiet and polite and like pay attention to every element of the piece. And I say to everyone all the time, I'm like, nothing you ever make will ever be more interesting than someone's phone going off in the like bottom right-hand side of the stage. So you just have to accept that if someone in the audience is going to open a bag of chips and that ruins your performance because the audience has stopped paying attention for 10 seconds, you've made a bad play as far as I'm concerned. It needs to be able to withstand people jeering, people yelling, people engaging with your work and really getting loud and rowdy with it. Because that's when I feel like we really experience the liveness of theatre, that sense of sharing and joy in community that like theatre is meant to do. And I feel like you see live music capture that. You see the pop-up globes capture that. You see a lot of fringe performances capture that. But a lot of those main stage productions still, I think, fail to really bring an audience in. And then they wonder why their subscriber bases are so old.
But do you think that audience engagement must take the form of sort of being like up and active? Because I feel like some of the time you can be quietly shedding a tear or just laughing to yourself quietly. And it could be quite alienating if we were trying to force like all of our audiences to get involved.
That is true. I suppose audience engagement doesn't need to be so loud and boisterous. I think in terms of my work, I always try and make work that is it's generally upbeat. It's generally comedy. I like to make people laugh. So I hadn't considered the softer, more quiet moments that people may intend to. But there's nothing more exciting than when you're watching a movie and you kind of, you're shedding a tear and you're feeling pretty sad. And you kind of look over and the person next to you is doing the same thing. like that's kind of really what I think is important. It's the act of feeling free to experience those emotions within the theater. And not feeling the need to, this is separate, but I'm going to say it anyway, but not feeling the need to like justify them. Or like, I feel like sometimes when we have an emotion, we then leave and we go into the foyer and we all turn to each other and we say, ah, did you see how they did this? And that made me feel X and Y and Z. And I'm like, actually nothing that happened on stage was like, it was a totally unique experience to me because something that happened on stage reminded me of my mum. And then I started bawling my eyes out at a totally inappropriate moment. But I think that's important. I think that's very important.
100%. Yeah, one of the most exciting moments I can remember from being at the MTC was when someone had a heart attack in the audience. We all had to be evacuated.
Terrible, but it's terrible. So fun.
They're okay, was my understanding.
I have a friend of mine, a designer, Amy Jackson. She's my favorite person to work with in the entire world. She's so exciting and she's great to go to theater with because she always has the wrong reaction to things. She went and watched an opera. It was like Romeo Castellucci's, you know, masterpiece Requiem or whatever. And there's all these moments where people are doing these crazy things like they're eating dust or whatever. And it's meant to be somber and you're meant to not, but she could not stop laughing so loudly in the middle of this audience. Everyone kept turning around and glaring at her. She was unafraid to just sit there and guffaw at what she thought was absolutely hilarious. Yeah, I think it's great. That's the kind of reaction that I love to see in theater. And it's honestly probably the only reaction I've ever seen anyone have at the opera. So take that, opera fans.
Apart from falling asleep.
Yeah. Okay. Question number four. I think I'm up to question four. How do you track your personal creative growth over the course of multiple projects?
Ooh, this is an interesting question. And again, I must relate it back to teaching because nothing has generated more personal growth in my life than being a teacher. It has just been completely transformative. I was actually speaking about this yesterday with someone. So the projects that come to mind are both the actual theatre projects that I've been doing within teaching, but also just the project of teaching, because every lesson is a performance.
That's gorgeous.
Performing in front of, speaking of audience engagement, you're performing in front of a pretty disengaged, hostile audience a lot of the time. So it's a tough crowd. And I think the process of, number one, accepting that the audience is not always going to like me and is not always going to respond well to me. And then rebuilding my self-esteem from that. has been a really interesting process, and also just creating theatre at uni and with adults is just such a different experience than creating theatre with teenagers has been. And I feel like I've seen this growth in my ability to just manage, like be confident in my decisions, troubleshoot for any occasion, which is all quite boring practical stuff, but I feel like it's just been a really important skill that I've developed. And it's made me realize how important that is for pretty much any theater piece, like just the more practical admin side of things, you know, like generating the ideas and like bringing out the acting is one thing, but
yeah,
just getting it done and troubleshooting I feel like is a massive part of it, and that's something that I've really seen a lot of growth over my teaching.
That's such a good, I think with kids especially, I used to teach, and working with kids, unlike like adult actors will bring you ideas and they will come to you and they will generate stuff and they have their own creative processes. When you're working with kids that don't have that background, you have to like do so much prep to prepare them so that they can just come up with ideas and it's easy for them. And they don't know that you've spent like 6 hours working out exactly what you're going to say to lead them to a place where they can generate these ideas. But yeah, I think you're totally right. Good prep is good art.
And I think that's it's a really great way to grow your own career process by having to find ways to articulate that get that across to young people. Be like, this is how you come up with an idea. This is how you take this idea to this place. And then this place, like do a freeze frame, add a sound, you know, like all of these, like scaffolding the creative process in this really specific way, I think grows your own creative process so much because it forces you to reflect on it.
Last question.
All right. I don't know which one to pick because I really like both of my last questions. Okay, this one I'm really curious to answer. Is theatre cool? Why not?
Wow, that's a very bold question. I would say No, it's a bold question, but I would say like theater generally is these days pretty uncool in terms of the people who go to see it, the people who talk about it, and also like the general attitude regarding theater is that it is like, it's not, it's old, it's stuffy, it's filled with Shakespeare and Strindberg, and it doesn't tell the stories of young people. And I think at its heart, young people are cool, right? Young people get to decide. It's the one thing that they will always hold over people in power, is that people at power don't get to decide what's cool, right? The young people decide what's cool because they're the ones who make you feel bad if you're uncool. You don't know how to turn on a computer. You don't know how TikTok works. You are uncool, whether you like it or not. Whether you earn $1 million and drive a fancy car, you're still uncool. And I think in that way, theater definitely feels like the domain of the old, especially in the money that you see where it goes. It goes into the hands of people who want to see their classics. They want to feel this nostalgia that I feel like young people can't deal with. There's a few exceptions. I think I talked about it last time, but Fangirls by Eve Blake that recently toured the country. I think that is an example of cool theater. Yeah. I think a lot of indie productions, I saw Grief Lightning, which was like partially a like TED talk, partially a performance about how like Grease Lightning is super messed, like the whole Grease world is super messed up and uncomfortable. I thought that was really fun and cool. I think live cinema, Katie Mitchell and the people who are doing that work with like live feed on stage, I think generally it was cool. STC did it this year, so it's probably become uncool again, but for a period there it was very cool. I think, yeah, elements of theater is cool. The more young people that are going to watch a show, the cooler it is, but as a whole I think theater is lacking the coolness that it needs to bring in the audiences that it wants.
Truly, I truly agree.
That's my attitude. I'm afraid that's all we have time for today. But this has been so lovely, Phoebe. You're spectacular.
Yes.
I hope to see you in a foyer somewhere or some of your work online or anything. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. This is lovely. And thank you to our facilitators.